Okay, we're at the Mishnah at the bottom of Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Bet. Okay, there's sheets today, if you have to follow, on some of the daf anyway. Okay, we're going to have a lot of Mishnayot, short Gemarot. Okay. Achat omeret meit, ve'achat omeret lo meit. So one woman says, there's two women married to the same guy. And one says, right, the woman and the tzara. So the woman says, my husband's dead. And the tzara says, he's not dead. Zosha omeret meit, tinase v'titol k'tubata. V'zosha omeret lo meit, lo tinase v'lo titol k'tubata. So now we have a situation, very bizarre, right? One woman thinks her husband's dead, one woman thinks her husband's not dead. So the one who thinks her husband's dead, she gets to go based on her own testimony and get remarried.
It's like,
but her testimony, right, it's really different versions of reality. But, and we're going to see how the Mishnah relates to it. So the other one, because in order for her to remarry, she'd have to rely on the other woman's testimony. And what did we say yesterday? That the tzara is not reliable to testify about her tzara, basically, right? One wife can't testify about the other because she might hate her and try to do it against her. So she doesn't get to get remarried. Plus, she also thinks the guy's not dead. Okay, so echad omeret meit, ve'echad omeret neharag. Let's say one wife says, my husband died in his bed. And the other wife says, no, our husband died by getting shot. Okay? So now we're going to see there's a machloket. Rabbi Meir omer, ho'ilu makhishot zo etzo, hare elu lo yinasu. These are contradictory, right? They're both telling the same story, but in a different way. It's almost like two witnesses coming together and their story doesn't corroborate. Right? This famous story of this university professor who gives a test and the kids come in on a Monday morning after the weekend and they've been out partying and they all say, oh, listen, let's just tell the professor we had a flat tire on the way back. You've heard the story? And then the teacher gives them all, he says, fine, I just want you to answer one question. So he puts them all in a room, he gives them, a test. The question is, which tire had the flat? So anyway, so this is what happens here. No one's believed because it's not possible that the guy was both shot or died of natural causes, okay? There's obviously some misinformation here. And therefore, Rabbi Meir says, these guys all get thrown out of court. Like, we don't believe any of them. There's clearly something, not right going on here. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, Omrim, Ho'il v'zo v'zo modot she'eno kayam ninasu. What's the difference? Yeah. Why he died? The fact is, they both say he's dead. Which also kind of shows that we're putting this in a different category of eidut than other things, which we've already seen, right? This is a different, because if two witnesses came and said two contradictory evidences about something else, we wouldn't believe them. But here, they say basically they can get remarried. So there's a machloket in this case. We're going to see, okay, and I specifically set it up like this, okay? You can see in the first case they don't have a machloket. Now the Gemara is already going to jump on that right away and say what? How could there not be a machloket in the first case? The first case, it's also contradictory evidence. One says he's dead and one says he's not dead. Why don't we say that that's a case of contradictory evidence? And Rabbi Meir also, if he says in this case it's contradictory evidence, that also. So we're going to see two different answers for that. Okay, next case. Eid omer meit ve'eid omer lo meit. Isha omeret meit ve'isha omeret lo meit. Okay, now we have two cases. It's unclear exactly what we're talking about here. The first case, it's clear it's one witness versus another witness. The second case is a woman against another woman. Now, if we say, right, there's two ways to understand this. Either we're talking about a woman and her tzara, in which case you would say what? That this line is Rabbi Meir, basically, disagreeing in the first case. You follow? He's saying now it's a little bit of a strange structure of the Mishnah, if that's the case, but they're going to say, like a Stam Mishnah is like Rabbi Meir, and the Mishnah ends here saying, if it's one woman's testimony against another woman's, a mate and low mate, then she can't get remarried. And then you'd have to say that the Isha and the Isha here is a woman and her tzara, or even if it were a woman and her tzara. And that would be contradictory evidence, and we wouldn't accept it at all. And that's Rabbi Meir disagreeing with the first line of our Mishnah. Another way of explaining it, and basically I'm giving away most of the Gemara here, another way of explaining it would be to say that this is a random woman. Now, it's two random women come into court and say the guy's dead. One says he's dead, one says he's not dead, or one witness, one male witness against another male witness. And basically that's what we call contradictory evidence, and we don't go by it. that you have to realize in this case, you'd have to assume that what? This is when they both come to court kind of at the same time or before the woman remarries. But we learned already previously that if one witness comes to court and says the guy's dead, and then she gets remarried, and then another guy comes, another one witness comes and says he's not dead, we don't believe that witness because we've already believed that first witness to count as two, and two doesn't go against one. So this would have to be a case where they kind of came around the same time, and we didn't yet give a psach din about it. In other words, once the psach din comes out, you understand the difference? If one witness comes and says mei, okay, eda chav, and then there's a psach din about it, and the beit din says, you're right, we accept your testimony, this testimony turns into a testimony of two witnesses. And then if one guy comes later and says, lo meit, right, we have one eda chav, we're not going to accept that, because it's now two against one, and two is greater than one. Okay? But in our case, it's all happening before the psach din, before they've decided what to do in this situation, we have contradictory testimony, and then we don't accept it. Okay? And then, like I said, the question is it random people we're talking about? Or if it were the woman, but if it were the woman herself against her tzara, then we believe the woman, and we wouldn't believe the tzara, right? We believe her for her sake, and we don't believe her for the other woman's sake, though each one ends up separately like the first case. Or we say no, even in the case where it's her and her tzara, this is Rabbi Meir's opinion, he disagrees with the first thing we saw in the Mishnah, that if one woman comes and her tzara disagrees and says, lo mate, then right, the Tanakhama here said, which we would have to attribute to Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, who appear in the second case as arguing, that we'd have to say that they don't, right, that they don't think that this is a du makcheshet, and they think that the one woman who says he's dead would be able to remarry, and the other woman who says he's not dead wouldn't be able to remarry. Okay, so now, the Gemara goes and starts with the first case. Okay? The Gemara here, so first they're going to ask a different question. Ta'ama da'amra lo mate, right? What was the case? The case was, wife number one says he's dead, wife number two says he's not dead. And therefore, well, wife number one gets remarried and gets her ketubah, but wife number two doesn't. Now, the Gemara assumes, right, what does it say? You can infer from here that only because she said lo mate does she not get to get remarried. But ha ishtika, what if she just didn't say anything? What would the halacha be? According to the Mishnah, it sounds like if she just said nothing, well then she'd tinaseh, she would be able to get married. And that can't possibly be the case because ha ein sarami idal chaverta. Right? In other words, what they're pointing out is this case in the Mishnah should apply whether she says lo mate or whether she says nothing. Because we already learned that a woman's believed when it comes to herself, but she can't testify for her sara, because the she could be possibly trying to mess her up. So now we have to say that the assumption of the Gemara is not, in other words, just because it says lo mate doesn't mean if she was quiet she'd be able to get remarried. No. Both if she said lo mate or if the second wife said nothing, no matter what, she can't get remarried. Why does it particularly say lo mate, that she has to say lo mate? So it's drichale. That case needed to be brought to teach you that even in that case she can't, she doesn't, there was a chiddush in this case. So let's read. What was the chiddush that they had to tell you this? Salkada tachamina ha-mayit v'hadik, as you might have thought, the guy really did die. And it's the whole question, we don't really know, is he dead or is he not dead? So you might have thought that it's clear that the guy's dead. V'hadika amra lo meit l'kulkule l'tzarahi d'kamachavna. What does that mean? Why is she saying lo mate? She's just coming to say lo mate to mess up the other wife, right? The first one. She just wants to mess her up. So here's a great line. V'tamut nafshi im plishtim ka'amra. Okay, here they change the pasuk, tamut nafsha im plishtim. The real pasuk is tamut nafshi im plishtim, which means, and I'll die with them, right? In other words, I'll mess myself up, but who cares? Because I really want to get at my, right, my tzara. In other words, it's worth it to me. Loich patli, right? I'm happy to die for the sake of this, ka'amar, right? She would say. So you might think that it's so obvious here that what? That she's lying just to mess up wife number one, and therefore her lo mate really means he is alive. Or in other words, right? Because she's only saying it. And if she's quiet, so she's quiet. And then we say, well, the testimony can't be accepted to the other one. It's obvious. But if she says lo mate, dafka her getting up and saying lo mate means she wants to say, I'm killing him, right? In other words, I want him, And as he's really dead, and I just want to mess up the first wife. And therefore, you might think that we can assume that he's really dead. And by her saying lo mate, it's obvious that he's dead, in which case we should allow her to get remarried. Okay? Kamash malan, that we don't. Okay? And therefore, it has to tell you this case to teach you, no, we don't paskin that way. We're not that convinced, and, you know, we don't allow it. Okay. Now we're going to get back to what I said about Rabbi Meir arguing in the first case or not. Achad omeret mate, okay, v'chule. So, v'liflog Rabbi Meir bereisha. Why doesn't Rabbi Meir disagree in the first case also? If he thinks that mate and neherag is contradictory evidence, well, mate and lo mate is also contradictory evidence. Okay? You have to think about, what is the evidence lo mate? Does it mean he's alive, like I saw him living, or I know he didn't die? Like, what does it mean to say I know he didn't die, right? It's like you're saying something didn't happen. So you could say, the Gemara doesn't talk about this, but one possible difference, I think, is that lo mate just means I believe he's alive, right? I don't think she actually saw him walking on the street when she says lo mate. So it's a different sort of evidence from he was shot, right? Or he was strangled by someone, or, you know, rather than saying, I know he's not dead, okay? It's a different sort of evidence, and what kind of evidence it is. Right. It's, without proof, what does it mean he's not dead? Okay, she has no proof for anything, really. She has no proof to say he was shot dead. But I just wanted to think about the fact a little bit that lo mate is the absence of something, not that something actually happened. Maybe that's why it's a little different. But anyway, they say, why doesn't Rabbi Meir disagree in the first case? Amar Rabbi Elazar b'machloket shnuya. He says, actually, Rabbi Meir does disagree in the first case. Okay, you can even look at the structure of the Mishnah. When Rabbi Meir appears, he says, Rabbi Meir, maybe he's referring to both the first two cases. In other words, it could be, not the perfect structure for that, but it could be. So they say Rabbi Elazar's opinion is he really does disagree. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, in other words, the first line of the Mishnah is only according to Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Rabbi Yochanan disagrees and says, Afilu tema Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir really doesn't disagree, okay? You could say that first thing is Rabbi Meir. And why would he say that the second case is Hakhashan, Mate Neharag, but Mate Lo Mate isn't Hakhashan? You'd have to say this. Afilu Rabbi Meir modeh dechol Lo Mate be'edut isha lav Hakhashahi. When you say Lo Mate with the testimony of a woman, that's not contradictory evidence, okay? It's just not considered. And that could be for the reason that I said before, right? That maybe lo mate isn't real evidence, right? It's not really saying anything in particular. So we don't treat lo mate as a dur hakhasha, according to this. And then they say, wait, but Tanan, what about the last line in the Mishnah? Eid omer mate ve'eid omer lo mate, isha omer mate v'isha omer lo mate, hareze lo tinase. So bishlama le Rabbi Elazar. It works perfectly to Rabbi Elazar because you say stomach of Rabbi Meir. This is again assuming that the later part of the Mishnah when it says Yisha omer at this and Yisha omer at that means a woman in her tzara. And then it would work perfectly. You'd say this is the stam and the stam is Rabbi Meir. And there's Rabbi Meir's opinion where he contradicts Tanakhama. Again, very bizarre structure of the Mishnah. We don't generally find the Mishnah would be structured this way if they really argued in both cases. Usually Mishnayot are very organized. Argument case number one, argument case number two. Here it's case number one, case number two argument. Go back to case number one and see a different opinion without actually anyone's name appearing. Very bizarre. But anyway, they explain it. That's the way the case is. Ela Rabbi Yochanan Kasha. But to Rabbi Yochanan, it really is difficult. We don't have a good answer to this last line. And the answer with Kasha really is difficult. You could bring explanations, like I said earlier, that you could say that Isha Omeret and Isha Omeret doesn't mean it's a random woman and not the tzara and her, you know, the woman in her tzara. And therefore, you could explain it that way. But the Mishnah, the Gemara doesn't bring that explanation.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
You're making a lot of assumptions. It doesn't seem right in a court of law to say, I think that because this one says this, it means this.
Well, that's the question. Okay, so this is the debate, and we're going to see specifically in the next Mishnah. That's going to be, to what extent are we concerned about this? Now, you have to remember, what are they doing? They're going l'chumra. They're saying she might be lying to, you know, for her tzara, and therefore we don't believe her when it comes to her tzara, right? And therefore we say you can't go get married to someone else because you're still a sefek eish hadish, even though the other woman we believe and we treat her as... So that's exactly what they're trying to get at. To what extent do we deal with the fact that we don't know really what the truth is? And then what are the precautions that we take? And we're going to see a lot of that today. Okay? Where we do this in-between stuff because of it. She goes abroad with her husband. She comes back by herself and she says, okay, my husband's dead. Okay, so she can get remarried and get her ketubah. But assuming there's a second wife, okay, but the second wife can't get remarried. So now they're going to jump one more step. Let's say the tzara is a bat Yisrael and she's married to a kohen. The guy who's maybe dead, maybe not dead, is a kohen. Does she get to eat truma or not? Okay, in other words, yes, we say you're an eshet ish, right, l'chumra, okay, and therefore you can't get remarried. However, do we say that we believe enough that he's married to allow her to eat truma? Now remember, a zar eating truma is mita bidei shamayim. It's very serious. So this is exactly, Shari, what they're getting at. How do we treat this? Do we treat it in... Do we assume 100% she's just lying? Well, first of all, we can't be assuming 100% she's lying because we're letting her get married. It's this crazy situation where we let her get married, but we don't believe her when it comes to the other wife. It's very bizarre. So anyway, they say...
They're doing l'chumra on both sides.
Right. Mm-hmm. Although they're really doing l'kula to allow her to get remarried, which is also interesting. Okay. So, tochal b'truma devei Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon says, no problem. We treat her 100%. She's a married woman. She can eat truma. Rabbi Akiva Omer, ein zo derech motziatam midei avera, ad jetei asura li nasei v'asura milecho b'truma. In other words, we have to avoid averot, and therefore we're going to forbid her to get remarried, and we're going to forbid her to eat truma. Amra, what about this case? Amra, meit ba'ali, v'achar kach meit chami. Okay, she goes abroad with her father and with her husband and her father-in-law. She comes back, she says, my husband died, and then my father-in-law died. Now, what do we say? Remember, she's not believed when it comes to her mother-in-law, right? We can assume she's lying about the mother-in-law to mess her up. So what do we say? Again, Tina sevetitol ketubata, v'chamota asura. She could get remarried, but her mother-in-law can't. What's the difference between this case and the previous case? The first case was one woman testifying about one man, and just one man having ramifications for two different wives. Here, she's talking about two different people. Okay. So you could say, well, believe her that the husband's dead. We don't believe her that the father-in-law's dead. But in any case, the halacha is the same. But you could see a distinction there.
How could she testify about someone else's husband?
Why? She said, I saw him die.
If she's there.
She could testify about anybody she saw dead. The whole thing is that she's not believed when it comes to testifying about her mother-in-law. So the fact that she put these two together doesn't make any... You know, again, the point is that even though she says this all in one... mouthful, we're going to believe the first half of what she says and we're not going to believe the second half,
really,
because the second half affects someone else.
Yeah.
Whereas the first line was, we're going to believe what she says as it relates to her and we're not going to believe it as it relates to someone else.
Also because it's 80 shot. It's 80. It's a woman's witness. She can testify about her husband, but she can't testify about a woman.
No, a woman can testify about anybody who's dead. In a case of death of a husband, we allow a woman to testify because of the aguna situation.
The father-in-law's not a husband.
No, about anybody. About a husband dying. In other words, when it comes to a husband dying and a woman being an aguna because she won't know, we allow a woman's testimony. That's what we've been learning the past few dapim, right? That we allow a woman to testify about this, and once we allow a woman, we assume she's like Shnei Edim, right? Her testimony is good, fair and square. Okay, so now, I mean, we saw that there were maybe some minor distinctions whether two women could go against two men, or there was a whole thing there, but anyway, we're not going to get into the details of that.
Right? I really feel like women are so vindictive.
Well, it's
not. I mean, the whole thing is based on women being so vindictive that she would go, she's not even her. Like, once she says that her husband died, she's no longer the daughter.
Ah, so they're going to talk about that. Yafet.
And then so why would she then?
Right. Yafet. So they're going to bring up that issue that she's, some of the refreshers bring up the issue that at that point she's not even her mother-in-law.
I was saying the same thing you did, and I agree with it, except the thing is there were such strong financial ramifications for us that we can't today appreciate it. Like,
if you had to always share with somebody else.
Yeah, but...
Even if I think it was a man and it was two men with... Okay, it's not going to be that with two men with women, but you see it with siblings.
Right, the rivalry between
the
siblings.
The rivalry between siblings over simply, my mother was paying more attention, my dad was paying more attention.
Even with grown-ups.
Or even with
right?
grown-ups.
Even with grown-ups. It happens in all families, you know. Right, it doesn't stop when you become adults. Right.
You know, I mean, not everybody's like that, but it seems
right.
to be.
You also have to remember that the families lived together.
Yeah.
They lived in these, we saw it before, that the one of the issues was that the women were telling, like the mother would tell her son things that the wife was doing. Because the mother was with the wife all the time, with the daughter-in-law. She
and
would be like, tell him all the things that his wife was doing wrong.
I was going
to
say,
and
that
there was a lot
living
of
living in the same household, but they're living in the same village.
I know, but
and everything is small.
But
if everybody knows everything about everybody else.
But if her husband dies, if the mother-in-law's husband dies, whether she can remarry or not, she gets money. She gets money from his death.
Who, if the
yes.
wife gets money, you're saying, what
yes.
are you talking about?
I'm saying if the father-in-law dies, the daughter-in-law tells the father-in-law dies.
Yeah.
So the mother-in-law gets money when he dies.
From her tuba, you're saying.
Yeah.
So
I'm saying,
it's
not a financial
no, the whole question is, she trying to mess her up? Is she trying to totally humiliate and embarrass her? This is like a great way to get back at your mother-in-law, if anyone's interested, right? You testify that the husband's dead, right? She goes and gets remarried, and then boom, he shows up, and now she's really messed up because she can't marry her first husband, she can't marry her second husband, and guess what? She's no longer your mother-in-law anymore because she's out of the picture. Now, in this case, she's not going to be your mother-in-law anyway, and that's a big issue here. But okay, let's move on.
Okay.
But yeah, there's a lot. Again, we talked about this yesterday, I think it was, that you just don't know that maybe, and it's not that we suspect everybody, it's that there's a chance that maybe she's lying. In other words, if a woman were to testify like this, maybe she's lying. We don't really know, but maybe she is. So therefore, you know, we want to leave open the option of pursuing that maybe there's a lie going on here, and we have to be careful about that. Okay. So now, what do we say in this case? The exact same thing. So the tinasevet itol ketubata, she gets her ketubah, v'chamotah asura, okay, but the mother-in-law can't. Haita ba'i Yisrael l'kohen, if the mother-in-law was a ba'i Yisrael married to a kohen, tochal b'truma, diber Rabbi Tarfon, Rabbi Kiva omer, ein zeh derech motziah midei avira, ad shtei asura l'nasev asura melechol b'truma, right? We're going to treat her l'chumra and not allow her anything. Okay. Utsricha. So now they have to say, why do you need both the case of the woman and her tzara and the case of the woman and her mother-in-law, right? What's the chiddush of each case? Di'i itmar hach kamaita, if you just had the first case of the woman and her tzara, bahaka amar Rabbi Tarfon mishum ditzara degufa. What's with the tzar? The tzarata. Okay, she causes pain to the woman's body. What does that mean? Because she takes the husband certain nights and doesn't allow her to have the husband other nights. So there's a much stronger rivalry going on. Okay, and therefore, b'haka amar Rabbi Tarfon mishum ditzara degufa, aval chamota ditzara mili da'alme ema modi le'la Rabbi Akiva. But when it comes to the mother-in-law, what might we say? It's just that they have issues between them. You know, maybe she says not nice things about her and talks to the son about her. But that's less petty, okay? Here we're getting into, right, how much of an argument do we think between them, you know, how much do we think they really hate each other? And therefore, you might think that Rabbi Tarfon would agree with Rabbi Akiva. He would agree with Rabbi Akiva that she wouldn't eat truma. Wait, why would it be that? It would be the opposite.
No.
Chochal b'truma. Right. We'd assume that he really is dead. Right,
yeah.
Exactly. And we wouldn't allow her to eat truma. Exactly.
So by Akiva saying that she can't eat truma.
Right.
Like,
he's saying,
you can't believe the daughter-in-law.
Right, exactly. V'eat mar baha, and if you just talked about the daughter-in-law case, the mother-in-law case, what would you say? Baha kamar Rabbi Akiva. Ava baha, ema modi le'la Rabbi Tarfon, sricha. Okay, but you might say that in the case where they really have much higher likelihood of hating each other than Rabbi Akiva would agree with Rabbi Tarfon, that we really think she's lying, and therefore the tzara can continue to eat truma. Okay, sricha, and therefore you need both. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel Halacha k'Rabbi Tarfon. Okay, the halacha is like Rabbi Tarfon. It's interesting. The Ravid doesn't have from here to the end of the sugya. Okay, which is interesting, but And therefore, you would come to a different halachic conclusion, right? You don't necessarily say halachic Rabbi Tarfon. But the text in front of us says, Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel, the halach is like Rabbi Tarfon, okay, that we really assume she's lying. And Amar Abaye, Af Ana Nami Tanina. We can prove this from, it's the Mishnah coming up. Nitan li ben b'medinat hayam. Okay, what if she says, I had a son in Medinat Hayam. Meit b'ni v'achar kach ba'ali. Ne'emenet. Okay, if she says, my son died and then my husband died, meaning I'm chayav in Yibum, right? She's ne'emenet. If she says, ba'ali v'achar kach b'ni, my husband died and then my son died, ain't a ne'emenet. Okay, she's not believed. V'choshashin lidvareha, and we're concerned for what she said, and therefore, choletza v'lomet yabemet. In other words, we say, maybe she's telling the truth, maybe she's not telling the truth. We don't know, right? We're going to treat it both ways. So therefore, we're going to say, if she says that my husband died and then my son died, it means she's not chayav in Yibum. However, maybe it's not the case, and maybe really there was no son, or maybe there was a son, the son died first, and therefore she'd be chayav in Yibum. So we're going to make her do chalitza to be yotzei kol safek. So now, what are they darshan from this? Lidvareha hu dechoshashin. Ha lidivrei tzara ein choshashin. We're choshash in this case. You know, they said, you could have just said, instead of adding the words choshashin lidvareha, they could have just said choletza b'lo mekabemet. We've seen a million cases like that, right? Where there's a safek and they just say, do chalitza, don't do yibum, right? So be yotzei the safek. But now, what do they say? The fact they add the words choshashin lidvareha, it sounds like, particularly in this case, we're going to worry about what she said and maybe she's lying, maybe she's not. But when it comes to the tzara, we're not going to be concerned. In other words, we're going to assume that she's lying. Okay? And therefore, Shema Amina, right? And therefore, the woman gets to eat truma because we're assuming that she's lying. Okay. New case of suffering. Kidesh achad mechamesh nashim. Ve'eno yodea eze kidesh. He gets engaged to one of five possible women and he doesn't know which one. Kol achat omeret oti kidesh. Everybody claims it was me he got married, engaged to. No tain get lechol achat ve'achat. He has to give a get to each of the five, misafek, umeniach tuba benehem umistalek. And he puts the ketubah money in the middle and gets out of there as fast as he possibly can. And they can fight over it. Okay. First of all, what's a ketubah doing? We talked about this. You're not necessarily chayav to give a ketubah in a kiddushin case, okay? Mm-hmm. Right? Only when you get married you give the ketubah. But we did see situations where people gave a ketubah anyway. In other words, they committed the ketubah already at the kiddushin case. You'd have to say that was the case here. And it's very likely that he did a ketubah, but he kind of like said, I'm going to give you a ketubah, but he didn't write down, because if he wrote down, he probably would have written the name. And the assumption is that these all five women don't have the exact same name here, right? Ketubah has the name of the woman written out. You can check your ketubahs at home, but they all have your name written out, okay? So therefore, the person kind of say it must be some situation where he kind of promised her ketubah money, but didn't write it all out yet. Okay. Debe Rabbi Tarfon. That's what Rabbi Tarfon says. Here we're just seeing another case of a suffix, and you're going to see Rabbi Akiva says the same thing here. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Ein zo derech mosimi de avira, ad shehe yitain get uktuba lechol achat ve'achat. Okay? You have to give a ketuba to everybody. Okay? Rashi points out here, by the way, he gives a get to everyone, im eino chafetz lisat kulam. He has an option. If he wants, he can marry all five of them. It's not like he has to give them a get. Okay, but the assumption is, right, we talked about this, that there wasn't really polygamy going on in that time. And also we talked about the fact that it would be a financial burden. Five is really a lot. We talked about that four is like a max. That at some point there was a sugya that talked about that. Anyway, okay. So he says you have to give a get, Niktuba. You have to basically, you messed up. Because you forgot who you married, it's your fault, and therefore you're going to have to pay for your mistake. Gazal echa michamisha, ve'en yodea me'ez a gazal. Okay, again, he stole something from a potential five people, he doesn't know from which one. Kol echad omer, oti gazal. Me'niach gazela b'nehem u'mistalek, the Rabbi Tarfon. Okay, Rabbi Tarfon says the same thing. Put it in the middle and let them fight it out. Rabbi Akiva omer, ein zo derech musimi de'avera, ad sheshalem kol echad v'echad. Again, he robbed someone, right? He did something wrong here. Right? In each case, the guy messed up a little, right? This case, much more so. He stole. It's his responsibility. Five people claim it. He's got to give back to all five. Okay, now the Gemara says, kach. They're going to assume, what's the case? They brought two cases here. Kidesh, getting engaged, right? And stealing, gazal. But doesn't raise issues of other cases, okay? Kidesh katane, ba'al lo katane. It doesn't say if he already slept with them, with the woman, okay? Gazal katane, Lakach lo katane. It doesn't talk about what if he bought an object, right? Let's say you buy something from someone. Now, generally, right, we pay money, get the item, right? But sometimes, and this happens even now, right, you buy something and then you pay later. So let's say he buys something from someone and then five people come and say, hey, you bought this off of me, you owe me the money. Okay, so it would be the same kind of situation. But if you notice, they're not mentioned in this Mishnah. So now they say, the fact that it says Kidesh and Gazal, and it doesn't say Baal and Lakach, it makes our Mishnah very confusing because it doesn't hold, okay, we're going to see that there's a machloket somewhere else about, there's a discussion about this machloket, Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva. Okay, the chart will help you for this. Our Mishnah says the machloket is in Kidesh v'Gazal, but there's a machloket, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar and Tanakama, about in which case, here, we're short one, in which case they argue, Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva. And you'll see that nobody says that they argue only in Kidesh v'Gazal. Okay, we're going to have other options. So let's see. So Mani Matnich, according to is this Mishnah, Lo Tanakama Velo Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Titania, it says in a bright, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Lo Nechleku Rabbi Tarfon Rabbi Kiva Al Shekidesh Echad Mechamesh Nashim Be'eni Yodea Eze Kidesh, Sheminiach Tuba Be'nehem U'Mistalek. Everyone agrees, according to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva would agree that in the Kidesh case, you put the ketubah and everybody fights it out. He doesn't have to give a ketubah to everyone. Ama Nechleku Al Sheba'al. The real issue is if he actually slept with one of them. Then they have a machloket. Rabbi Tarfon omer miniach tuba benehenu misaleh. Rabbi Akiva omer ad shemashaleim lekol achav echad. Now, he continues. He goes now to the second case, the lakach and gazal. Lo nechleku Rabbi Tarfon v'Rabbi Akiva al shalakach mekach mechamisha b'nei adam ve'en yodeh me'ezem em lakach. Shemeniach tmei mekach benehenu misaleh. If he doesn't know from who he bought, he leaves it in the middle. Lo nechleku ela shegazal mechamisha shamar Rabbi Tarfon miniach zela benehen umistalek. Rabbi Akiva omer ad shishalem zela lechol echad ve'echad. Okay, so now clearly he doesn't know like Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, because Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says they don't argue in the Kidesh case. They only argue in the Baal case. And they argue in the Gezel case. So the Gezel case would work, but not the first case. And then they say, Mizika, I'm Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar b'Kidesh v'lakach lo pligi. Michlal, the Tanakama Savar Pligi. Now the assumption is the Tanakama would think, right, if he says they only argue in Baal v'Gazal, and he disagrees with Tanakama, so what's the assumption? The Tanakama are going to say that they argue about Kidesh v'Lakach, right? And maybe also Baal v'Gazal, but the assumption is the Tanakama who disagrees with him are going to say the flip, okay? In which case, Tanakam would say Kidesh and Lakach, and our Mishnah says Kidesh v'Gazal. So it doesn't match either one of those opinions, right? He says they don't argue in Kidesh, and Tanakama says they argue in Lakach, whereas our Mishnah said they don't argue in Lakach. So it doesn't match either opinion, okay? So they're going to say, right, Miklal Tanakama Sever Plea. So now they say Mani. E Tanakama, if it was Tanakama, Litni Kidesh v'Lakach, it should have said Kidesh v'Lakach. And E Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, Litni Ba'al v'Gazal. Okay, so either our Mishnah should say Kidesh v'Lakach, or it should have said Ba'al v'Gazal, and the assumption always is, if our Mishnah is, like, they're arguing very specifically over what they're arguing about, they're having this Aman Nechleku, right? So the assumption is that our Mishnah has to match and fit into one of those two opinions. Okay, because otherwise they would have kind of listed this as a third. Now, you could just say our Mishnah disagrees, right? A very easy explanation. You know, certainly if you're learning Mishnah, you would just say, oh, there's three different Tanaitic opinions. One's quoted in our Mishnah, and two are quoted in this Braita, and maybe they weren't arguing in the same place, and they didn't know when they were putting that Braita together about this opinion, but there were different opinions about it. Anyway, the Gemara doesn't take that approach. The Gemara is going to try to match our Mishnah with one of those approaches, fit it in. It's a very common Gemara approach. So what do they say? La'olam Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. It is Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Umay Kidesh? Kidesh bibia. It was a man who did kiddushin by having sex. Remember we said you could be mikadesh, because of pashtar ubibia. So he did it. Now, if you recall, though, I think we talked about this, that they didn't, right, it was going to look like znut. So they discouraged people, right? Rabbanan basically said, no more kiddushin bibia, but this guy did it anyway. And that's why he gets penalized. And then all of a sudden, what do we have here? The kiddush b'baal and gazal, right? What's the unique about those? Why are they arguing? Because one approach is to say, Rabbi Akiva's approach is to say, we're giving this guy a fine. You know, he did something wrong. And what did he do wrong? Right? He went against the takanav hachamim not to marry a woman in this manner. Okay? And that's why he has to pay up to everybody. So that's what we're going to see here. So Ta'ana Kidesh Lahodiacha Kochod Rabbi Akiva. Why did our Mishnah say Kidesh instead of right? And why did it talk about that case? Lahodiacha Kochod Rabbi Akiva. Da'af Agav De'Isura De'Rabbanan Avid Kanis. In other words, even though it's he was over on Isur. Wait, why is it even though? It should be Dafka because, right? It should be Dafka because he went. He was over the Yus Niknas, right? Wouldn't that be the way you would read it? That's okay. I guess they're saying even though it's only an Isur D'Rabbanan, that's the point. Even though it's only an Isur D'Rabbanan, in other words, you could be Mekadesh but be a Midoraita. But since this guy was over on an Isur D'Rabbanan, even though it was only D'Rabbanan, we're still Kone Soto. And Tana Gazal, why does it say Gazal then? Lahotiacha kocho D'Rabbi Tarfon. Da'af agav D'Isur D'Oraita avid lo kanis. And here they want to show you the Chiddush in Rabbi Tarfon. Even though he's stolen, it's Usur Midoraita to steal, right? Even Rabbi Tarfon thinks that we're not Kone Soto. In other words, he stole. He doesn't know who he stole from. Fine. He doesn't have to pay double times five. He just puts it in the middle and they fight over it. And that's the Chiddush. Okay, so there's a Chiddush for the Kidesh case on the Rabbi Akiva side. Even though it's only Usur Midorabanan, we're still Kone Soto. And the Chiddush on the Rabbi Tarfon side is the Gazal case. Even though Gazal, and it's Usur Midorabanan, you still don't have to pay every individual person. Okay, new Mishnah. Now this is going to be a whole Mishnah about what was the chazaka. You remember we learned about this word chazaka? She's bechezkat what? In other words, without her testimony, what do we assume? She goes abroad with her husband and with her son. So now when she leaves, if her husband were to die, what will be assumed? There's no chiyuv yibum, right? Because she has a son. So now her chazaka is that there would not be a chiyuv yibum. So let's see what happens. Ubat va'amra meit ba'ali v'acharkach meit b'ni, meaning I'm not chayev in yibum, right? Because my husband died, the son was still alive, and she returns without anybody. Both are dead. The question is just, do we believe her about the order of death, or do we assume that she's lying because she doesn't want to do yibum, or because she wants to do yibum, or whatever it might be? So here, if she leaves and she's bechezkat that she doesn't need to do yibum because her son's alive, and then she comes and says, my husband died, and then my son died, so ne'am enet. Because it just keeps her in wherever we thought she was before. No chiyuv yibum. Okay?
Question.
Yeah.
If they're together, the husband dies, and literally 3 minutes later...
Doesn't matter. No yibum.
No yibum.
No yibum. It's all the... We saw those cases where the avalanche, you know, something fell on them, and it was a question who died first. It's all the second would make a difference. Meit b'ni v'charkach meit ba'ali, and therefore I'm chayev in yibum, eina ne'emenet, she's not believed, okay, because the chazakah, she left, she wasn't chayev in yibum. So now, only based on her word, are we going to allow her to do yibum when there's an issur of eshet ach, potentially? Yeah. Okay, there's like serious nigun interesim here, right? We have, on the one hand, possible chayev yibum, on the other hand, possible issur eshet ach. So, what do we say? B'choshashin l'dvareha, okay, but we're still concerned, we have to go l'chumr. So what do we do? Choletze v'lomet yabemet, okay, she does chalitza, not yibum. So that way, you don't have to worry about issur eshet ach. And what if she leaves the country, just her and her husband, she doesn't have any kids, so she leaves the country and she has a chiv yibum upon her if the husband were to die. Okay, she's bechezkat that she should do yibum. Nitan li bebe medinat hayam. She said, I had a baby when we were abroad. V'amra meit b'ni v'acharkach meit ba'ali, but my son died, and then my husband died, so anyway, I'm still chayv in yibum like you would have thought from before, right? So ne'amen, and obviously she's believed, because that was her chazaka anyway when she left. But meipa aliva harkach meipini, meaning I'm not chayv in yibum, ainanen. Man, we don't take her out of her chazaka, and choshashin lidvareha. But we also are concerned that maybe it is true, and therefore choletzav alomet yabemet. Same conclusion. Nitan li yabam b'nidina hayam. Let's say she left and there was no brothers, so there was no chayv yibum, and now she says, "Well, while I was abroad." You know, and also the Yabam, I guess, was abroad. My mother-in-law was abroad, right? And or my father-in-law, right? And he had another son. Okay? Amra meit ba'ali v'acharkach meit yivmi. Yivmi v'acharkach meit ba'ali ne'emenet. Okay? So if she says, right, whichever order it is, either I was chayv in yibum or I wasn't chayv in yibum, but anyway, right, he's dead now. So she's believed. Hachahi uba'ala v'mal medina hayam. What if the Yabam was already in existence? We knew he existed. And she leaves b'chazkat that she has a husband, and if he were to die, there's a Yabam. Amra mei pa'ali v'achar kach mei yivmi. Yivmi v'achar kach mei pa'ali. Okay, whatever order she says, eina ne'emenet. She'eina isha ne'emenet lomar mei yivmi. Okay? Shetina se. Okay, so she can't say my Yabam died and therefore I can go get married. Okay, we don't believe her to say that. And what else don't we believe? Below meta achota shetikanes lebeto. And you can't, she's not believed to say my sister died in order to allow her to marry her sister's husband. Because remember, achot ishat, the flip of ish at ish, right? Ve'ein ha'ish ne'eman. Sorry, Eshet Ach, I meant to say. It's the opposite of. Ve'en ha'ish ne'eman, and who else isn't believed? Lomar meit achi, she be'em ishto. A man is not believed to say, my brother died, so he could do yibum with the sister. Okay, and then what are we concerned about all these situations? Incestuous relationships in the family, right? That one is going to have his eyes on the other. It's an Isser Erva, so he's going to lie in order to match you, the Isser Erva, right? If the brother dies and there's a yibum chiyuv and there's no kids, she's allowed to marry the brother of the guy. And when it's the sister case, the isur of basically the husband of the sister is only as long as the sister's alive. If the sister's dead, there's no isur anymore. You're allowed to go marry your sister's husband.
The way this seems kind of, I'm sorry, seems kind of terrible because, let's say, they're always forcing this woman to do chalitza.
Yeah.
And if she wants to keep the inheritance in the family, let's say she wants to, she can't.
Uh-huh.
Let's say it's a wealthy family. She's pushed out.
Right, she's pushed out of the family. It's true. I know, I was thinking about the fact that chalitza is such an unpleasant ceremony. Here this poor woman has to, like, undergo this chalitza ceremony, unnecessarily, possibly, you know. But it's always the issue because it's chiyuv d'orayta of yibum. You can't get married, isur lav, to go get married to someone else. So you have to free her up. But also, it allows her at least to be free to go get married to someone else, which she really is going to need.
But it is, right.
It's true. I mean, she's on the streets, basically. Okay, so now we're just basically concerned that people are lying in order to have incestuous family relationships. So, ein ha'ish ne'amar lomar meit achi shibe mishto, ve'lo meit ha'ishto shisa achota, and he also can't say, my wife died, so that he can go marry her sister. Okay, last part for today. Here's a great question. Ba mine Rava mi Rav Nachman, I think you're going to like this a lot. Rava asked Rav Nachman, ha'mizake ged li ishto bimkom yabam mahu. Let's say you say, I'm going to accept this get for the woman, okay? Then the husband dies, and then there's a chiyuv yibum now that the husband's dead. So the question is this get a good get or not? Now there's a very important klal called zachin la'adam shelo b'fanav ve'ein chavim la'adam shelo b'fanav. What does that mean? You can do a transaction to accept something for someone that's in their benefit. Okay, something that's beneficial for someone you can do when they're not there. So if he accepted this get, do we say that that was beneficial for the woman, and therefore we can say it was good, in which case she's not chayav in yibum now, because her husband was actually dead? Or do we have to say, no, maybe it's a chov for the woman, and ein chavin la'adam shelo b'fanav. If it's bad for her, well, you can't do something bad for someone, a transaction that's bad for someone, if they're not there, because who knows if they wanted you to do it. The whole assumption is, if it's good for them, they'd have been happy if you did it for them. So the question is it good for her that her husband's dead and she doesn't have to do yibum, or is it bad for her that her husband's dead and she doesn't need to do yibum? This is what we've been discussing all along. So I like this thing he's talking about. We don't know what's better for the woman, what's not. Is it better for her not to be stuck with the brother of her husband, or is it better for her not to have someone to take care of her and provide for her? So,
mahu
kevan disanyale,
but
you can't trust her, right? Ah, yeah, fit. It's going to be an issue, possibly, of generalization. Mahu kevan disanyale. Maybe she hates her brother. So zchut ulad, zchut, right? V'zachin l'adam shelo b'fanav. O Dilma kevan dizimnin derachmale, right? That she, I guess it's rachamim. Like he has rachamim in her. I don't know exactly what the kibun of the rachamim is here. But I think it just means sometimes she likes him, okay? Chov hula, okay? ve'en chavim l'adam shelo b'fanav. And this would be bad for her then to say that she's that she's divorced, and then she will no longer be chayav in yibum. So, Amar le tanina v'choshesh l'dvareha v'choletz v'lomot yabemet. We see from our Mishnah, what does it say? We're choshesh l'dvareha, and she does chalisa v'lomot yabemet. Okay, so what do you see? That, so this would prove, she goes and gets married. Badai Mishakra, Mishum Yerachma. Wait, 1 second. What would we prove from here? That. Right, it gives the credence both ways. So therefore, what is it telling us? That. Right. Okay. The point is, this is what I was unclear about. The point is, it's unclear. You see that they're choshesh for both directions. And like everybody just said before, right? In other words, maybe we don't really know. It could go this way, it could go that way. Some marriages are like this and some marriages are like that. But now they're going to get interesting. They're going to say, Amar le Ravina le Rava, hamizakeh get lisho bimkon k'tata mahu. What if we know that they've been arguing? And therefore we know that it's good for her to have been out of this marriage. Kevan di lek tata bahades chutula. Okay, since they were arguing, obviously you're going to say in that case, the get is good for the woman because she wants out of this marriage. O dilma nicha degufa adifla. Okay, or do you say, okay, that it's good for her? Why? Because maybe she'd rather just have a body next to her, even if it's an annoying body, right? Even if it's, right, she'd prefer to have somebody with her. Tashma, we learn it from here, and I always remember learning this in high school, made a big impression on me. Damarish Lakish, we saw this the other day in different words, but I always remember the Aramaic phrase, Tav lemetav tandum lemetav armalo. Women would always rather be with someone than to be sitting alone, okay? A woman would always prefer company to not company. Okay, here we're going to have some interesting quips or expressions, popular expressions about this phrase, okay? About this concept that women would always rather be married. Abaye amar, deshum shemina gavra, korsei becharata ramule. Okay? I'll read it in the English here. One whose husband is small as an ant, she places her seat among the noble woman. In other words, she'd still, right? She gets to, because even, no matter what it is, even if her husband's a nobody, it improves her status. Okay? It's very sad. A very sad sugya. Rapapa amar, dinafta gavra, tikre besefe bava vatetif. One whose husband is a wool comber, okay, which obviously was like a lowly occupation, she calls him to sit with her at the entrance to the house. In other words, she'd still rather have him among her to make her look good that she's got a husband. Rav Ashi omer dekulsa gavra, one whose husband sells cabbage, lo baya talfache lekidra. She doesn't need lentils for her pot. And she's so happy that she doesn't mind even if he doesn't even provide her with basic food stuff. Right? We also saw that lentils are like the lowliest food. Like even if she doesn't even have lentils, like she doesn't care. Okay, lentils were considered like the cheap, anybody can get those.
Oh my gosh, this is
Tana, amazing. Here's the real, yes, the real tip of the iceberg. Okay, this is like one of those.
I finished.
All I can say is that the parak ended here, and I'm very thankful the Masechet didn't end here. Tana Bikulan, okay, an unhappy wife who basically uses her husband as a display piece, okay, and therefore, what are we saying? She'd still always rather be married? Bikulan Mizanot Vitalot Bibalehen. In order to deal with the fact that they have these horrible husbands, they sleep around. But they claim that the kids belong to the husband, and they can do that because, you know, they carry the children, whereas the man obviously doesn't have that ability. But anyway, this is why the whole thing was that a get is always in her interest, even when there's a tata. And therefore, we're going to say, Zachin la'adam shalo b'fanav. So if someone accepted her get, it's considered a get, and even if there's a tata b'nehem, right? And therefore, she wouldn't be chayav in yibum. Okay, Hadron Alacha Isha Shalom, right? Interesting name of the parak. Isha Shalom, right? Very,
that.
Yes. Very, anyway, difficult sugya for women. I can only say that, you know, these are those sugyas that you really have to look at, I think, in two perspectives. Number one, from the prism of what their lives were like in those days, and it was a different time. And number two, from the fact that the Gemara is written by men and trying to think about what the situation of women are, not necessarily really knowing if that's the, you know, I don't know, was it 100% accurate? You know, the Gemara was written by men. It wasn't written by women. And it was written from their perspective. And you have to wonder, you know, if they're reading into it and how much they really understood women then is, you know, men now don't understand women. So I don't know, you know, even with all the talk about it, I don't know, you know, how much they all understood women. And especially when it comes to things like this, would they really, right? It's a really fascinating question. Would a woman rather be in an abusive relationship than be on the street? And this is a real struggle even today, yes, right? There's many, many women who stay in abusive relationships because it's easier than the alternative. Well, so or they think it's easier than the alternative. You know, it's even if it's not
going that far, to just slightly earlier, if she was arguing, then of course she'll want to get, but that's not necessarily
exactly
true, right? You can have an argument and still want to stay with your husband. An argument isn't. Even
right.
If you tend to argue.
Right. But here they seem to really be giving the extreme. I mean, this is really, you know, difficult situations. Either your husband's not providing any food for you, and in others, and we talked about this as a financial thing mainly, and here we see even if the husband wasn't providing for financially, she still wanted the status of being married. There were so many factors that went into this. And you see it nowadays, you know, lots of unfortunate abusive situations where women stay married because it's just easier than getting out of it, and or they think it is, right? In the end, they learn, you know, some women learn it's not necessarily easier, and they do get out of it, but it takes a long time to take that step. So, you know, while you can look at this thing and say, oy vey, you know, you can also say that this is just, it really is reflective of reality even today of, you know, not necessarily everybody. There certainly aren't women that would prefer to stay married, but, you know, in many situations, this does still happen, and it's a big issue.
It's a very sad commentary on humanity, though.
Yeah,
it is sad.
The men
are bad, and the women are bad. Like,
right.
Everybody's bad.
And the relationships, the family relationships are bad, and people are interested in, like, you know, in sort of in...
It's like
you know,
sister wives.
In relationships with family members, and... Right. But again, I think you have to look at the sugya as... It's not that this goes on all the time. And remember, I talked about the other day that these situations didn't come up all the time, that people are coming and testifying, my husband died, and my yabam died, and my this died. It doesn't happen every day. So the question is, when it does happen, do you have to be concerned? Do you have to be suspect that maybe something's going on? You have to read these sugyas like that. You can't assume that this is just, we're assuming every relationship is like this and every... It's more like when this situation happens, do the rabbis have to look and say, what's going on here? Is there something? Because remember, generally we don't accept testimony that relates to yourself, because this all goes to Sanhedrin about Psulei Edim. You can't testify about a case when you're involved in it, right? You're nogea b'davar. In this case specifically, they allowed it because of a guna and maybe no one else saw. But then it's tricky to what extent you allow it. And even in Sanhedrin, it talks about your ohev and your sone are not believed. So here you have exactly that. You have a person who's possibly your sone, right? They're potentially. It's not that they are, but a mother-in-law and a daughter-in-law could potentially be in a sino relationship that would affect someone's testimony about this kind of a thing. So you have to look at it from the perspective of their concern that maybe this would be the case. Not necessarily that it is. So... yeah, it's the only way you can really read the sugya and think that humanity is okay. That it, you know, we all know that there's cases of, you know, people that are like this and that are difficult. So because of that, you know, have to keep it in mind. Okay.
I need to ask you, Shirley.